Welcome to Nerds Before Birds. Each week on the show, we take a look at a film and attempt to answer the question, does it soar like an eagle or simply flip the bird?
Welcome back!
It's almost on par with the actual Rotten Tomatoes Metacritic score.
Never seen a sonogram roll its eyes before, but it did.
I'll do my best to tell these two losers what happened.
Well, if you're still here, we do know things, don't worry.
If any movie is below 6 on IMDb, then it's probably not worth watching.
I always have what I want to say in my head. It's like, oh yeah, that's the perfect way to word it. It's not.
Hello, I'm Paul of the Australian Four.
I'm Fiona.
Hey, and I'm Dean.
You said that like that was a question.
I'm Dean.
I said that because I'm so used to there being...
Which one of his personalities do we have today?
To there being three people on this podcast. So I said like I was wrapping up and I was like, oh wait, Jason has to talk next.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'm coming in now. And I'm Jason.
Hi, Jason. Welcome
to Nerds Before Courtrooms, the podcast where you'll find reviews, rankings, and general discussion on all things.
It wasn't as forced as last week.
That's true, but that's all right. This week on the show, we're talking all about the trial of the Chicago 7, the Aaron Sorkin-directed film. It's his second film after Molly's Game, which came out in 2017 with Jessica Chastain. This one has...
Mm-hmm. Eddie Redmayne, Borat.
Borat.
Yeah. And who's the Spider-Man villain? Falcon Boy or whatever his name is? Hawkman?
Falcon
what?
Boy?
Eagle?
Oh, Michael Keaton.
Oh, yeah. Michael Keaton is in this. Yeah,
Birdman.
Vulture.
That is a spoiler.
He's Birdman, too.
I know.
And Birdman. Yeah.
Birdman, Batman, and Vulture. He's like all of them.
All bases so, covered.
Vulture Man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Actually, he's coming back as Batman. Did you know that?
He is coming back as Batman.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
he's coming back as Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the
potentially
going to
be
DC.
The main Batman moving forward in the Flash.
Oh, I don't know.
Really?
If you've seen the Snyder Cut trailer, then we're going to get a lot more of the Batfleck. What do we think of that? Does anyone care at this point? Because I honestly, I'll watch it. It's going to be bad.
I am absolutely loving trolling my siblings at the moment, who are very much jumped on the hype train, and I'm kind of keen for it, but I get more joy out of just completely like trying to cut them down and be like, oh yeah, I'm so looking forward to hating the same movie twice. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's fair. I was excited when they first announced it, but the more I see trailers for it and as it's coming, like leading up to it being released, I think it's next month.
We're talking about the Robert Pattinson Batman, right?
No. We're talking about the Justice League Snyder Cut.
The new cut.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So, the closer it gets to being released, the more I think that it's going to suck. Because, like, looking at the more content that they're releasing, there's no substance.
The Joker's in it.
There's no substance to anything.
The Joker has substance.
One, this is a recut of a movie that's already been out, and two, the fact that he needs 4 hours to tell this story tells me that this is going to suck. It's not going to be good. Yeah. It wasn't good to begin with.
Well,
that's true. It wasn't good.
Yeah, no, and it's like the whole thing, like the issues with the DC universe kind of started before Zack Snyder left, and so having him come back, there's no reason to assume that he's not just going to bring the same issues back that he had.
Exactly.
Have you guys ever seen the ultimate edition of Batman versus Superman?
Heavens no.
Why would I put myself through that?
That is fair. That is fair. Why? That is absolutely fair. So it is like I'd say it's probably about 10% better than the original cut.
Only
10%. That's not much.
No.
Yeah, only 10%. Yeah, it's not very
that
high
means
at all.
That means it's 10% of a good movie. So.
That's how
percentages work.
It's all 10%.
He should have just not done it and then been like, oh, see, it's the studio's fault. Like, if I had my cut, it would have been 100% better.
It would have been
100%. Now he's done it and just proven that, like, this was as good. It was this is as good as it was ever going to get.
So guys, trust me. This is going to be sick. I promise. You'll love it.
We completely sidetracked.
We are.
Totally.
Speaking of movies.
Anyways, so getting this train back on track, we're talking about the trial of the Chicago 7.
Are you sure you don't want to talk about the Joker more?
No, I do not want to talk about the Joker more. We're moving on.
So he's got tattoo removal.
We've got a movie to talk about, and there's plenty of stuff to talk about in this movie.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
I'm going to just keep powering through because you guys are going to talk over me. And Fee, I might ask you because you're the only one that seems to actually respect it when someone's talking.
Turns out.
Just interrupt. Wow. Yeah, I'm getting like PE teacher flashbacks from Jason right now. Guys, I'm just gonna sit here until you're all quiet.
Yeah, it's your lunch.
It's your lunch, guys.
So you're saying this is not the first time you've experienced this and you should have learned by now? Oh my gosh.
I should have
learned. I'm currently being held in contempt in this court, apparently. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
26 times.
So, Fee, what did you think of this movie? Did you like it? Does it soar like an eagle or does it flip the bird? Where does it land?
I really, really, really enjoyed this movie. I liked it a lot.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
what?
I know.
What? You've got a movie that you liked? Like, well, really enjoyed.
When we start watching actual good movies, Fiona starts liking them. Weird
but
connection.
Never starts
there.
Crying. Weird never pattern. Starts crying.
No, I don't have a heart. It's fine.
It's like Bruce Willis in Friends.
I'm like Batman when he's 12. Like,
what do you want? When his parents died and he cried at the funeral.
Yeah, okay, sorry.
You're exactly
Batman,
like, exactly
Batman
like
before he became Batman, but as a 30-year-old billionaire.
Oh, got it.
Except
got
without it. The billionaire.
yes. You're like a poor Batman.
Poor female Batman.
You just got all the moody emo, but that's it.
That's without the money and also like without the bats and also right. without the man.
But I do still listen to My Chemical Romance a lot, so I feel like that's enough.
Oh, nice.
So you're a cosplayer.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Anyway, all I'll say about this movie is that I did really enjoy it, and I think that, like, just across the board, like, acting, writing, like, directing, like, it was really solid. You should definitely watch it. And I think it's gonna be I don't know, it's nominated for a lot of Grammys.
Grammys.
Golden Globes. Aaron Sorkin's first Grammy Award.
He's got everything else. He's got idea.
A lot of Golden Globes nominations, and I think it'll do well at the Oscars as well.
Awesome. Fair enough. Yeah, that's cool. So Dean, what did you think of this movie? Did you like it?
I hated it. No, this is fantastic. That was a joke. Obviously. I love Aaron Sorkin. The guy's a legend. I'm a big fan of his work, always have been. I've seen most of his movies and shows, I think.
Have you seen The West Wing?
Have I seen The West Wing? I've watched at least half The West Wing, I think.
Right. So you've just watched his part of The West
Pretty
Wing.
Pretty much,
basically.
Yeah. I've watched up to when he left the show.
I think that's all I watched up to as well.
Up to like he left in season like, 5 or just before.
Dean's
or
about
just
the
after.
Southeast Wing. He'll get
there. I'm on my way. Right. Awesome show. I even bought like Newsroom as well. And I was the one that Sports Night started watching Sports that, Night. Which is like, that's one of his very first shows, like before The West
he
Wing.
He did that before Newsroom. Yep. Didn't like Newsroom get drafted because of Sports Night?
Well, he did West Wing.
It was written before West Wing, I think. Sports Night. It was like way back then. It was basically, he was writing it or he came up with it while he was writing, A Few Good Men. Because he was watching a lot of Sports Night stuff whilst writing.
I love that movie.
A Few Good Men, apparently. That's a great movie.
Yeah.
We should do that one.
It is a really good movie. We should do it.
Too great. Anyway, I haven't seen Molly's Game yet. So I haven't seen his directorial debut.
You haven't seen Molly's Game?
Dude, I haven't.
You're a fake fan.
No. You haven't seen it either, have you, Paul?
Dude, I haven't even seen A Few Good Men.
You've definitely not seen it.
I was about to respond. I was like, no.
Oh, wait, is A Few Good Men the you can't handle the truth?
That's the you can't handle the truth.
Oh, what a time. I guess I have seen it then. Boom.
Ah, nice. You've seen that scene. Cool.
What else do you need to know?
That's kind of the make or break scene of that movie.
It is.
Like, he's got no evidence against
It's the final.
What's his name? Jack Nicholson. Climax. And that's all he can use, isn't it? Like, he basically has got to break him in that moment.
Yeah, he's got to trick.
And,
He's basically got to trick him into confessing. And he does, and it's amazing. He's the master of dialogue. And always has been, always will be. And he's like, that's on show in this. Like, some of the lines in this is just insane. This is kind of like the perfect Aaron Sorkin movie for him to make in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, it's very much.
He can write for so many different characters. Like, he can.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got the full spectrum of human emotions to work with here.
It's all about politics. Yeah. It's all about, the court cases and everything, which he's very used to, like with The Social Network. Just like a lot of different characters, and a lot of very, very different mindsets. Even on the same side, there are different mindsets and personalities, and they all clash and mingle and merge so well. It's really cool. And the weird thing about this is, like, the actual story apparently is even more insane than what this movie makes it out to be, which is nuts.
Yeah.
It's just like, I can't even comprehend that this is a real story, and then to find
what's
out
one thing
real
that
story,
was more and what was one thing that was more
the
insane?
Court case, like, a lot of it's condensed down into
you don't say,
obviously, like
it was
like
six months.
It didn't go for 2 hours.
The opening, like the opening 5 minutes of them, like, first day of trial and stuff, that kind of stuff happened over months, and apparently, like, the lawyers, like, most of them were already held in contempt before day one of the trial.
Bobby Seale was bound for a few days.
It wasn't just that. It wasn't just the one, like the couple of minutes that
it was 3 or 4 days he was, like, I'm not sure whether he was gagged, but he was
gagged, like, for 3 days. Because even the lawyer defending, well, not defending him, but the defense lawyer, pretty much said that this has stopped being a American court of law and now it's a torture chamber.
Which is
because, what, like,
you mean prosecution? You mean the prosecution lawyer?
The one that's not on their side. The
guy who looked like Better Call Saul.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
The Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
No, not Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yeah.
The other guy with the hair.
The other guy with the hair. The BFG.
The big friendly joke.
You
mean the defense
anyway?
Yeah, the Ready Player One guy.
William.
Yeah, so
William. Mm-hmm. I was going to call him William because I'm really not confident.
So you enjoyed it?
I loved it. I thought it was awesome. Much keen. I think Aaron Sorkin. I haven't seen him on this game, but he's proven that he's just as good a director.
So good, man.
As he is a writer. In a lot of ways.
Do you get, like, Steven Spielberg vibes from this? Because I feel like he's stealing some of, like, the way that things.
Steven Spielberg, this is Steven Spielberg's, like, project. Like, it's his story.
Oh, really?
So 10 years ago, he was looking for somebody to make this. He approached Aaron Sorkin. He called Aaron Sorkin and was like, hey, can you come over for lunch? Aaron was like, that's really weird. We're, like, not friends. Like we don't hang out. We don't, like, get lunch.
Yeah.
No.
And
we're not hanging
out with you. He went over and he was like, I've got this script. I don't have a script. I really want to make a movie about the court case of the Chicago 7 about these riots that happened in 1968. And Aaron was like, man, that sounds great. That's awesome. Like, let's do it. And then he leaves and he rings his dad and he's like, so what are these riots about that happened in 1968? Because he was 7 years old or something. And he was I'm keen to do it. So he was on board to do the script. And then 10 years happened, just a bunch of different things. Steven Spielberg dropped out to just do other projects or something. And then
He would have produced it because it's part of DreamWorks. Yeah, so of course. Is Steven Spielberg's company.
Yeah. It went through a bunch of other different directors. And then finally, after he'd made Molly's Game, Spielberg was like, okay, I trust you now to direct as well. So
awesome. Okay. So Molly's Game was kind of like the trial to make the trial of the Chicago 7.
Oh my gosh. In a lot of ways.
I didn't that okay, I started that sentence and it wasn't meant to be as hilarious as it obviously was. It's really funny.
It was not.
That's funny. I was like, yeah, so it makes sense why it seems very inspired by Spielberg. I feel like there's a bit of David Fincher kind of in this, in his directing style as well.
There is a like, lot of monologues.
Yeah, I was like, I thought him and Fincher have worked a lot together.
Fincher
as well.
Fincher loves exposition, man.
Oh, yeah. Well,
have they
but it's also, it's a courtroom drama, Paul. What do you
social
expect?
Network?
There's social no network. Zero good sound effects in this movie.
Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs? Or was that Danny Boyle?
That was Danny Boyle.
The opera singer?
Danny Boyle? Did you just say the opera singer? How are you even here right now?
Like, so you're on this podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you. There we go.
I was like, what the heck was the name of that? Oh, you're funny. You're funny.
Thank you.
I think don't reward they, that. They've only worked together on The Social Network. I don't think they've worked together on anything else that
I
can
he had.
Think of.
Like, you may be right.
I'm pretty sure that's it. But, yeah, like, I mean, The Social Network is fantastic, mm-hmm. and I still think it's, like, my favorite Aaron Sorkin script.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of that comes down to just David Fincher's style and the way that he captures that kind of, that energy.
True.
Paul, what did you think of this movie? Did you like it? Does it soul flip?
I think they completely underutilized Steppenwolf, and I think the character design for Darkseid looked terrible. And I don't know what they're going to do with this 4-hour cut, but honestly, I don't think there's any hope in saving it. But on Chicago 7, I loved it, man. I thought, like, I think I even said to someone today, I'm like, it's been a while since we've watched a movie that I was actually captivated into watching. Like, I enjoyed it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah, right.
What?
Yeah.
It's because you keep suggesting movies like freaking Rogue to watch.
Yeah, that's what he suggested it be. We're making suggestions long before you bloody came to town, mate. We're like, oh, wow, it's freaking what's the name from Transformers Fighting Lions. We're going to do it. We're going to do this back in, like, June, dude.
That doesn't justify why we watched it, because it was so horrible.
That's what we do here. We just watch weird crap.
And we don't need to spend any more time talking about it. So, yes.
What did you like about it? What did I like about it? It was just good. Like, it was the writing. It was definitely, like, I started watching The West Wing after doing, like, I kind of like met like halfway through his masterclass on writing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, this is really awesome. So then I started watching The West Wing, loving it. I do plan to finish it, but I just haven't.
Well, then, he tells you where he left the show in the masterclass. Yeah, so, like, okay, sweet.
Yeah,
that's my
it was the end
that's
of season four
point.
Or something,
awesome.
Right?
Yeah, something like that. End of season four.
Yeah, I was
season five.
Four. That's great.
Yeah, awesome.
I don't have to commit to, like, 9 seasons.
Amazing.
No, but this movie was great. I knew nothing of this topic at all. So it was interesting enough that it then made me do some more research into it.
Cool.
So, no, I thought it was really well done. That's, like you said, writing is good. It's all good. It's great.
I think that's a very interesting thing, because, I don't think any of us knew about this story before this movie. Is that
like a 1969 riot in Chicago doesn't really play heavily on us.
Yeah, I mean, even Aaron Sorkin didn't know about it before he started this project.
It was weird because there's a podcast that I listened to that was actually covering Abbie Hoffman at the time of this movie coming out, like, and this movie, like, I think it was like a few weeks before this movie came out that this was covering. Just it was like 3-part series on just Abbie Hoffman.
Was it because of this movie?
And
probably intentional.
Intentional, but I didn't even know anything really about this movie. And like I think we said in the Battle Royale that we did a few weeks ago, I didn't even know that Abbie Hoffman was the character,
the
that
Forrest Gump
Forrest
guy.
Gump encounters.
That's that guy.
Oh, at the front.
Oh, yeah. Sacha
Baron Cohen. Yeah.
Now I have
Sacha
this
Baron
connection.
Cohen's in Forrest Gump.
Not-
Yes. Sacha Baron Cohen is in Forrest Gump.
Okay. So if anyone of our listeners...
Like 10.
Well, they're going to retcon it. Like how they say that Spider-Man was in Iron Man 2. Now they're going to say that it was always Sacha Baron Cohen playing Abbie Hoffman in all his movie appearances.
The whole time.
That makes so much sense. So,
calm down, J.K. Rowling.
So, like the fact that this character, like, and the actual person has been so sort of influential in American culture.
Yeah.
Doesn't really, like, I mean, it doesn't really resonate with us as Australians. So, like, why would we know anything about this kind of thing? Like,
but
it doesn't really.
As Fee was saying, even Aaron Sorkin apparently didn't know much about this story before he started writing
That's true. I did enjoy this movie. I think it's good, but I think when you know, like, the real story, it's like,
it's even more insane.
It's a little bit more insane, but then there's also some areas that are sort of, like, there's one area where they're in the middle of the riot and there's almost like a girl almost gets assaulted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah!
And that did not happen in real life. And I'm like, and it doesn't make sense for that to happen in that scene.
It's just purely there. It's for the character. That's what? It.
Oh, yeah, it's for the character.
It's for Jerry.
Like, with the frat boys when they're
going
all... Frat boys. Yeah, yeah.
So,
do you think it was one of those, like...
it makes no sense in the context.
Yeah, do you reckon it's one of those condensed moments where it's, like, that kind of... that probably something like that did happen around the time, but they've just added that into... No, it just didn't happen at all.
It's completely, like... Yeah,
you'd have to be completely out of left field. Another level of insanity to do something like that in the middle of a crowd of angry rioters.
Right, like a frat boy.
Like, they're lucky only one of them punched him.
You're in the middle of tear gas. You're being tear gassed at the same time. And you're like, oh, you know what?
What do you want?
I'm going to assault this girl.
Assault this poor woman. No. I can't breathe, but that's fine.
Look,
I
understand that point. Like, that makes sense. But I think it was purely a screenwriting perspective. Like, you know, when you're writing a movie, you just need some way of showing the goodness of a character or them under pressure situation or something.
I get that.
So I totally I just don't think
you have to, like, go to that
extreme
level. Like to show it. Like,
as in, like, when the actual true story is extreme enough as it is.
Sure.
Exactly. It's like, why add a CG storm to a practical Halo jump? I mean, it's already awesome as it is.
It's already an awesome scene. You don't need to add anything to it. It's exactly right.
Okay.
Don't come at Tom Cruise.
Those kind
Leave him alone.
Like,
I'm not going against Tom Cruise at all. I'm going against the director.
Don't go after Christopher McQuarrie. Yes, I know him by name. Just leave him alone, okay?
I think everyone He's done knows nothing him to by you. Name, Faye.
Christopher McQuarrie, or as I refer to him, Tom Cruise's friend.
Okay, sorry.
So, but I enjoyed it the first time I watched it. Not as much the second time, knowing more about the true story.
Right.
But still, it's very good. Like, it's a very good movie, cool. sort of thing overall. Let's get into the plot, though. It's 1968 in Chicago, and there has been a riot where Tom Hayden, played by Eddie Redmayne, and a bunch of, like, well, let's say 7 people in total, and
Makes
one
sense.
Black Panther
mm-hmm.
that gets tied into the whole group. So 8 people are going on trial because there's been a riot. And originally it was going to be a peaceful protest of the Democratic Party convention. And there was, like, so Abbie Hoffman, who was the leader of the Yippies, which is the youth. What does that stand for? Do you guys remember?
Youth in Politics?
International Party or something, I think.
Yeah,
something like that. Really simple
youth
like that.
Politics.
Youth it is
protesting.
Something like that.
In everyday situations.
yeah, something like that.
Yippee.
So, yeah, so he's the leader
Youth
of
International
the Youth
Party.
International Party.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then you have Tom Hayden, who is the students for the Democratic Society.
Mm-hmm. In the STC.
So they're two, like, mm-hmm. yeah. They're two parties that have sort of combined and they're leading this peaceful protest that got out of hand in 1968.
Yeah.
And a bunch of police were injured, which they don't go into in the film. There was 190 police that were injured and hurt in it, but you never see one of them go down because that would be bad for the main characters.
And they're protesting the Vietnam War as well. That's sort of the big... That's what's going on. Just so we understand that.
Yes. So, these seven people are on trial because they are the leaders and they've sort of incited the riot and they've crossed across state borders. So the government is determined to basically throw the book at them and trial them.
So there was this law that somebody made up a couple of years before for a completely separate, like, particular issue that
very
was like
racist reasons.
You can't cross state lines to incite a riot. Like, it was just that specific. So these guys had the National Democratic Convention. I think that's the order of the what it's called.
Democratic Party Convention,
was happening, and obviously people were being conscripted to the Vietnam War by, like, just a system of apparently picking a birthday, and if that was your birthday, you were getting sent off. So people were getting conscripted and then dying like 1,000 people a month or something crazy. Don't look that up because I don't know if it's true.
There were a lot of deaths,
like, unnecessary. Obviously, people were protesting the Vietnam War, and they were like, this convention is the perfect place to protest the war, and that all kind of separately, they all decide to protest it. So,
And they decide to join up.
Jerry and Abby Hoffman go and protest with the youth. What was it? Yippies.
Youth International Party.
Youth International Party. Tom Hayden and his mate Rennie go, and then another guy, David Dellinger, played by John Carroll Lynch. Like, so great.
How good is he?
So good.
He's great.
Yeah. Like, he's fantastic in this.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
And
Zodiac Killer.
Yeah, the Zodiac Killer. That's like I was like,
finally
really
gets to play
nice.
A good guy.
Well, he has played a good guy in a few movies, like, but this is, like, he really shines in this.
Yeah,
like, and you can sort of, like, he's a real, like, gentle giant kind of person that's, like he's a conscientious objector.
Yeah.
And
he's like, the leader of that group. So, that's, like, another group. That's, I think, three so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, he, in real life, like, he didn't punch out a guard in the courtroom they show in the movie.
Oh, he's in Crazy Stupid Love. He's the...
Yeah. Bernie. The babysitter's dad.
Yeah, the babysitter's dad. That's right.
What are you even doing?
So
Birdie?
He, He, in real life, that incident where, like, he punches out the guard, it's kind of inspired by an incident that he had either in high school or college, like the real David Dellinger.
Yeah.
Huh.
Because what happened is he punched a guy in a fight and he basically felt so guilty that kind of started his whole conscientious
objecting
to things, like non-violence. Yeah. So he was like very strict non-violence from then on kind of thing, and part of the reason that he didn't go to World War II and all those kind of things because he believe strongly in non-violent sort of activism.
Yeah.
So, like, the fact that he does punch a guy, I know that it's just for the story and kind of shows, like, his character a bit more, but that didn't happen at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
In reality.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, you've got...
yeah, I love his character in this.
He's really cool. Mm-hmm. So, I guess he's, like, he's, like, the pacifist. Eddie Redmayne and his friend are, like, the student Democrats and
Abby
Hoffman.
Abby Hoffman, and they're like the weed smoking hippies, you know, that are like public fornication, whatever.
Yeah.
So those are like the three groups. That's like the seven, and then you have Bobby Seale, who decided to go down to Chicago to give a speech.
Just a speech.
To give a speech. He wasn't even like, hey, let's make a protest. He just like gave a speech.
Yeah.
And he was the like head of the Black Panthers nationally. Yeah.
And so I think there's even a line early on where they talk about like how he literally was just thrown into the mix with the Chicago Seven to make them all seem worse. I think because like one of the members of the jury were scared of the Black Panthers. So like,
well,
like,
oh, that's legit it. And fun fact, did you every like all his lines with the judge
far out.
Here between him and the judge are from the for the transcript of the thing. None of them are like made up or anything.
Yeah. That's amazing.
There's some great, like, actual lines that came out of this. Like, there is a line where Abby Hoffman was actually asked, like in an interview, what he'd give to like what price he'd give.
Oh, that was an actual line.
That was an actual line, like what? From like an interview where he says like, "What will it take to stop this pursuit or whatever?" I can't remember the
because it's come out in trial that he made a joke when he went to meet to get the permits.
Yeah, give me $100,000
and we'll call it off, kind of thing. Yeah. And then what is your price?
Like, that's verbatim what he said to the guy because they're like, "Would you take $100,000?" He's like, "I'd take $100,000, but I wouldn't call off the activism kind of thing, like the actual thing." Like he literally said that, and they're like, "What would it take for you to
What is
stop
your
this
price?
Pursuit?" And he said, "My life."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he actually said that to like the reporters at the time.
Yep.
And that was kind of the character that he was. But his character, like his person, like him as a person, he was kind of one of these people that understood media in such a way that he could manipulate it in a way.
For sure. I love
like,
how smart and he to is. The extent, hey.
He's very smart. And they do touch on it in this movie just a little bit. They talk about him levitating the Pentagon. But in real life. So he organized a protest with a bunch of his hippie friends, basically, where they got... they told a newspaper that they were all going to... do a seance and levitate the Pentagon because they just knew
that the
media would just like bite
it.
They would like
definitely.
Yeah. Oh, so that's the origin of that Eddie Redmayne line.
Yeah, that's the origin. Yeah, that line. And even to the extent like because they were known for like their crazy antics, the prosecution had said to a bunch of people that like they were going to come in, they had to be prepared. That all the defendants would come into the courtroom on the first day naked, kind of thing. So that was like one of the things. And the thing about that is like they didn't come in naked.
No.
So then the prosecution kind of looked like this crazy thing that's just trying to fear monger.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So they completely fall into that category of like they look how they viewed them, kind of thing, like this, and sort of expose the anti-establishment
but
for what it is.
On the flip side, like things like because they did actually wear the judge's robes, happened. They did that, but also going back to that line, the whole "my life," like it'll cost my life. That in this scene, I like how it's basically used as the first kind of turning point for his character, where up until that moment he's just portrayed as the joke guy. Like he's like the Borat kind of classic comedian, and then that's when what's his name, the lawyer, the defense lawyer, is watching the TV, the interview, and that's kind of like his first indication. It's like, oh no, actually Abbie Hoffman does take this seriously. Like he is actually passionate. He's not just in it
but
for
I
a
think,
joke.
I think the thing with Abbie Hoffman is he was smart enough to realize that the whole trial was a setup from the beginning and they were never going to win.
Yeah.
And that's where him and Tom Hayden, as people like Tom Hayden wanted to, and it's sort of slowly, a little bit portrayed in this, that Tom Hayden's like, I want to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go to jail. Mm-hmm. But Abbie Hoffman's like, no, we're going to jail regardless.
And
we're not going to win.
He's accepted the fact.
So, their relationship throughout this movie is one of the best things about
it, I think.
It's
really good.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And they were publicly, I think it was either just before this or after this, they were publicly fighting, basically. And, they hated each other pretty much. But they also had like this mutual respect, and whenever I think it was Tom Hayden was interviewed at one point where I can't remember which one, it was one of them was interviewed, and the reporter's like, what's the go, is like this whole fight that you and Abbie are having, is it gonna like ruin everything, like do you not see eye to eye? And basically I think it was Tom Hayden, he was like, my issues with Abbie are nothing to do with our views, kind of thing. It's just the way that we enact those views, kind of thing. That's the only problem. Mm. We both see eye to eye in what we believe, but we don't believe the way of doing it, kind of thing.
The practice
and
of
you
that
trying to
belief.
Incite some sort of fight between us has nothing to do with us as a collected organization, kind of thing.
Mark Rylance, that's his, the defense.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's so good. Like, his first line to Tom Hayden in this movie is, whatever's going on between you and Abby has to stop. Kind of like, yes, indicating that there is
touching on as well.
Something's gone on before.
Yeah. Because I think Tom, Tom Hayden's like way of dealing with it was like, we need to win at all costs so that we can get out there and continue doing the thing. Whereas Abby Hatfield was like, well, we're going to lose either way. Let's use this to, you know, the world's, we're on a stage right now in front of the whole world.
Yeah, exactly. Neither of those. And that's how we viewed it.
Neither of those mindsets are like definitively wrong either. Like, you can definitely understand where both of these guys are coming from.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Which is very interesting. And it makes it so good.
Aaron Sorkin also like got to interview and meet with Tom Hayden before he died. Because this script took so long so their relationship, he got to know what their dynamic really was back in the 60s, awesome. Just from like actually talking with them. So I was like,
that's really cool.
Oh, that makes me feel like I'm actually watching a true interaction of these people.
Yeah.
Which is also kind of a benefit of doing a movie from this era, is that there is still some people who are still alive. You can get
Exactly. It's not that long
it's
ago.
It's kind of like the screenplay, the screenwriter for American American Sniper, where the screenwriter...
Because he died during production.
He was writing that screenplay and he was, he became good mates with Chris Kyle.
Chris Kyle was on set a whole bunch of times.
And then he was shot. And that became the movie. Yeah, and it's
very sad.
But that was like, they were actually, the screenwriter became making really good friends with this dude. And so everything in that movie is like, that's why I guess it's like a very intensely emotional, good movie.
Yeah. It's a great film.
So getting to the trial in this, that basically like Abbie Hoffman saw it as a farce kind of thing. Apparently, the judge in real life, when he was like first announced as a judge and first came out and all that kind of stuff, was like, I didn't ask for this case, but by all accounts, he did. He wanted the case. And I want to be on this case.
Wow. Kind of like, I would be a better judge than this guy. Like,
He had his mind made up. And this is like accurate. Like, all this stuff that he does is very accurate. Like, he was horrendously bad.
I had such a like Joffrey Baratheon moment with this guy because I'm like, I finished movie, I'm like, I hate this man. I hate him so much.
I mean,
which is a great sign of an acting job well done because
this screenplay was titled 101 Reasons to Hate Judges because it definitely gives you plenty. It's just nuts.
But how to lose a job in 150 days.
Like, Franklin Geller, I don't know how you say his last name, but he's so good at playing like an arsehole.
Oh, yes.
Like, he plays it so well.
Yes.
And, like, in all the movies that I've seen him do it, like, he's actually really good on Kidding, like the Jim Carrey series where he plays Jim Carrey's dad. Mm-hmm. Jim Carrey kind of plays this, what's his name? Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Fred.
Mr. Rogers.
So he kind of plays, Jim Carrey kind of plays this like Fred Rogers kind of character that has a kid's show and all that kind of thing. He's super, really good. Fee, I'd recommend you watch this show. It's actually really good.
I really enjoyed
it. It's fantastic.
It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. Loved it.
Yeah. This is like, taking that character and putting him into extreme events and him still being a good person.
And also putting him in present day kind of thing as well.
Present day, as well. And it's like all the complexities that with that. Mm. And then you add in Michelle Gondry's sort of aesthetic with,
Eternal Sunshine.
Sunshine.
Yeah. I've seen the first episode and it's pretty nice.
It's pretty an amazing show. Like, it got cancelled, I think, a few years ago.
All the good ones do. And R.I.P. Firefly.
But the two seasons that had end actually really well. So it actually kind of works kind of thing. So as a complete,
It
would come back because I really liked it.
It didn't drop off as a cliffhanger then.
No.
Oh, good.
No, it's definitely sort of works. Like, I could see more of it if they were willing to make more.
Sure.
I'd love to watch more, but I think it was just a little bit too expensive. I don't know.
Jim Carrey's pretty busy with all those Sonic Hedgehog movies at the moment, so... know, it's going to be pretty
absolutely, that's keeping busy.
Yeah, so pretty difficult right now.
But yeah, Frank Langella, he's just so good at playing a jerk, and he just plays this role so well, like this sort of senile judge that's just completely like backwards in everything that he does.
Oh, massive god complex.
Like, the statistic at the end where they're like, this case is given to lawyers like biannually for review, and 78% of them classify the judge as unqualified.
Yeah,
things like that. Like, being confident. They still mock him.
Do you want to hear something scary? So they gave him a rating of 77% or something, like in the 70s, right? There is a judge, a federal court judge, sitting right now that Trump appointed, who has never even stepped into a courtroom or like argued anything, like made a case for anything, let alone practice as a judge. And the Bar Association or whatever that does this percentage thing rated her as a percentage of unqualified as 100% unqualified. Wow. And she will sit in that position for years now.
Wow. So we get introduced to Richard Schultz's character, which is Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, I should say. Richard Schultz. I read that completely wrong. And Schultz. Apparently in real life, he wasn't as sympathetic to the Chicago 7 as what he's portrayed. He was
because they were like, we have to clean him up for Joseph Gordon-Levitt to play him.
Yeah, basically, we can't have him being a complete jerk kind of thing, or we have to have some character that's a little bit sympathetic to what they're going through.
Do you reckon Joseph Gordon-Levitt was like, oh yeah, I'll play him, but you need to make me likable? It's like, you need to make this horrible.
It was like that episode of Vicar of Dibley where it's like, I'm going to play Herod, but I'm going to play him nice. It's like, go to Bethlehem and kiss all the children. Did he say kiss?
Did he say kiss or kill? And then they finally do the show and he's like, kill them.
Kill them gently.
Gently. And give them candy. In fact, here's candy for all the children in the crowd. It's like, and all the kids are like, thank you. Thank you. I love you, Herod. Thank you, Herod.
Thank you, Herod. I love you, Herod.
So
Herod is basically Richard Joseph Schultz's Gordon-Levitt's agent.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So, like, Richard Schultz is brought in and he's the chief prosecutor on this case, and like basically he was referred to by a lot of people as the government's pit bull. So that kind of gives you a little bit of what his his real life character was like, kind of thing.
Small.
So and then we, sorry, what was
nothing,
that?
Carry on.
Yeah. Not so like the pit bull, like the R&B,
Like Miss Worldwide.
Miss Worldwide.
Miss Worldwide. Like.
Like,
he was called the pitbull because he can drop some dank beats. Yep.
That's exactly it. So then we have Mike Rylance's character, William Kunstler.
There's an S before the T. Just think that. There's an S before the T.
Tread lightly, gentlemen.
Yeah, I know. It's a hard one.
We'll just call him William.
Ever again in
we'll
this
just call
episode.
Him William, yeah?
Yeah, William.
Willie.
Bill.
So Billy K.
He's defending the Chicago 7, but he's not representing Bobby Seale, who is the, whose actual lawyer had gallbladder surgery and couldn't be present for the trial. So they'd asked to postpone the trial, but the Judge Hoffman was like, nah, I'm not going to do that kind of thing.
This whole story arc is nuts.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's basically denied legal representation.
Yes.
Correct. Exactly.
But then anytime they bring it up, he's like, you've got a lawyer right there. Just let him represent you. He's like, that's not how this works.
And every time they say, but he's not my lawyer, well, you're going to be held in contempt for saying that. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'm tired of hearing you say that. Like,
yeah.
But I don't care. Like,
I'm tired of you, you know, you can't. And even when he asks to represent himself, it's like, no, you can't. You have lawyers to defend yourself. And then there's like, no, he doesn't. Like, that, like, Mark Rylance just, like, fully loses his nut.
I love it.
At him. It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
It's great.
He is pretty good in this, and his American accent is pretty good as well.
Mark.
Yeah, yep. Mark Rylance's accent, but I felt like Eddie Redmayne's accent. I don't know. I don't like Eddie Redmayne.
And I don't really do like Eddie Redmayne. Like,
I'm with you, Jace.
I think it was Jupiter Ascending that just really ruined him for me.
Really? You didn't like his performance in Jupiter Ascending?
An Oscar-winning actor, and you're holding Jupiter Ascending against him still.
Like, I just can't handle Eddie Redmayne. If he starts talking like an idiot again, I'm going to lose my mind.
I do love that. It was a year after Theory of Everything came out, and everyone's like, Eddie Redmayne, oh my gosh, amazing.
I think it was like in the same year that he won the Oscar.
Yeah,
like,
no
I
way.
Feel like he got the Oscar like in
all those
Feb,
petitions came
and
out.
Then,
like, take
Jupiter
that Oscar
Ascending
away
came
from
out
him.
In like April.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like literally.
That's
but but like, yeah, he's, I don't know, there's something that he does where he sort of like really projects stuff, but in a whisper. That just doesn't work for me. It's like very forceful or something. I don't know. Like it's
didn't
just
notice.
yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just picking.
I can't see much, anything past those dreamy eyes. Honestly,
cheekbones.
Oh my gosh.
Cheekbones.
Yeah, that hair.
That mouth that I looks like it's full of gravel.
So, I think Sacha Baron Cohen, though, is, like, fantastic.
So good.
Like,
yeah.
I think he really embodies Abbie Hoffman as a person, and, like, you can see it with him. And, again, like we were saying before, like, John Carroll Lynch, he's great in this as well.
I do love, like, the Twitter. I think it was, like, a meme that went around. It was, like, everyone from Kazakhstan should watch Trial of Chicago 7 because it's as close as they're going to get to seeing Borat go on trial. And so they're not wrong.
Wow.
They're not wrong.
That's true.
Yeah.
So basically the whole court case is just a joke, but it sort of cuts back and forth between the court case and the events that played out as everybody goes through like their whole witness account sort of thing. There is a character that's introduced in here called Daphne O'Connor, which she was completely fictionalized. She didn't exist in real life. She was the FBI informant that
undercover. Yep.
That basically tricks Jerry Rubin into like whatever. I don't even know how she sort of entraps him, but she does.
She buys him a drink.
Compliments. Yeah. Guys are so easy to really manipulate it. Yeah. Come on.
Well, that's how you got onto here. You're like compliment us.
Yeah, I like your podcast.
What? You want to come on?
But yeah. We're pretty basic.
So, completely. So, like, her character was not real, but there were three also FBI agents that had sort of befriended Jerry Rubin and stuff like that. So it's sort of a compilation of those kind of characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so she testifies against him as well and sort of the whole group. And then it sort of cuts between the riot day and a bunch of different times that they protested and got sort of beat up by cops and stuff like that. It's sort of... There is, like, one scene where Tom Hayden is caught, like, letting down the tires on the car where he then gets arrested and, well, the next day they arrest him and he goes to jail and then that's when Abbie Hoffman leads a whole protest to go to the jail.
Yeah.
But there's the scene where he's letting the tires down on the car because his friend is being trailed by the cops. I think it's Rennie Davis is... Like, that's the character?
Yep.
Well, that's the real person. It's really weird when you do, like, a true story because they're not characters. They're actually people that they're playing.
They are characters within a movie, within the context of the story within the film.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Based on true real characters. Real people, damn it.
Yeah.
True. Yeah.
So, yeah, real people.
Based on real characters. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Rennie Davis wants to go on a date with his girlfriend and meet her parents and everything like that. And he doesn't want to be like followed by cops. So Tom Hayden's like, you know what, I'll just let the tires out of their car and they won't be able to follow you, sort of thing. And he gets caught midway through letting the tires down. And it's probably, there is this one line there that is probably the worst dialogue that I think I've ever heard in Aaron Sorkin film. And I think it's also because the just the delivery is really bad.
Now, is this, are you, hang on, are you projecting again? Is this just because you hate Eddie Redmayne that you're about to say this?
No, okay. It's not even Eddie Redmayne that says the line.
Okay.
So it's there's the two cops, right? Yep. There's the two cops standing right beside each other.
Yep.
And one of them, like, because they're, like, about to attack Tom Hayden.
Yep.
Like, he's...
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Same. Yeah. So they've pushed him onto the bonnet of the car and they've handcuffed him.
Yep.
And one of the cops that is standing directly beside the other cop goes, "You need to see what I'm seeing." But they're right next to each other. Mm-hmm. And it just feels so wrong. It's like he's like on a Skype call or something and he's live broadcasting, but the camera, like the other cop can't see. Like he can't turn around.
Kind of he's facing the mole. Yeah.
He's over the hood talking to Redmayne.
The way that he says that, like you just don't, like it's not natural to say that. Like, it doesn't feel natural. I feel like you just tap someone on the shoulder and be like, turn around,
bro, we got a problem.
You wouldn't be like, you need to see what I'm seeing. It's kind of like, I don't know, it's just that line. Like, it's me really nitpicking.
Yeah, otherwise, I was like, you are really.
The dialogue's really good.
Clutching at straws there.
Could it actually, completely. Could it only be in there because it was actually said at the time? And it was like, you need to see what I'm seeing. Yeah. It's like, what? It's like, I mean, look over here. It's like,
turn around.
Sorry, I misspoke.
Yeah.
They needed to get the script from Rogue, where it was where they were trying to draw the attention. Like, oi, look over here. Come, shoot at us. Oi, what a crap movie.
Oh my gosh.
But do you know what is actually impressive about this movie? Is the budget was $35 million.
Wow.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I feel like that's barely enough to cover the cost of the cast in this movie.
Legit.
That's nuts. Wow.
Unless they took it as a bit of a hit because the topic is so good.
Mm,
probably.
Yeah. This was a pro bono.
Well, they're not like they're not. I wouldn't say that they're all A-list.
You're just saying that because you hate Eddie Redmayne. So.
No, but I mean, they're not going to be like, they're not like Robert Downey Jr. like pulling in like 50
Nobody
million.
Nobody is like Robert Downey Jr.
Like, I know.
Only Robert Downey Jr. is like, Robert Downey Jr. Yeah, okay. I get what you mean.
Certain, like, they're in a different tier thing. Like, you've got like the 10 million sort of per movie the kind 10 of mil tier and they're all in like a 1 million sort of category kind of thing.
Like, you reckon?
Well, definitely for this.
Okay, cool. Sure. All right. That's good to know. Just, they're that cheap.
Are you budgeting for your next movie?
Yeah, it's good to know who I can afford.
You wouldn't put Joseph Gordon-Levitt as an A-tier actor?
No.
Really?
No.
No. He's not as big as he was maybe 5-10 years ago.
Fame is not the level of goodness of acting, though.
I agree there.
Yeah. Yes. It is when it comes to jobs, though.
But I think like you've got like your Will Smiths, you've got like people like I know.
So you're saying he's not a celebrity A-lister, like
he's not like
saying there's no movie stars. I suppose
he's not showing one of those actors, but they're not 10 movie lists stars, of like most kind of paid thing. Actors. He's not a Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah,
he's not a Robert Downey Jr. He's not.
Oh my
gosh!
Like, imagine if Samuel L. Jackson and like The Rock were in this movie. Like,
oh my gosh!
Which was so bizarre.
April Fool's
would
be your favorite movie for sure.
They would just be at the back of the courtroom as Black Panthers, just being like, "Yeah, what he said." I don't know.
Oh, that
dropping a few mother effing bombs like.
Mother effing bomb.
When Redmayne starts reading out the casualty list, they just start doing like desk pops.
Yeah. All I picture is them like going like out the window. They just drop into like
aim for the bushes.
Kind of thing, like aim for the bushes.
I just, or like if like when finally it's like when they in one of the scenes where like Bobby Seale's like saying, "I'm not represented." It's like, well, then who is your lawyer? And then suddenly Samuel L. Jackson walks in and is like, "I am bitch. Samuel Jackson,
yeah.
There are too many white guys in this court."
That would be good.
So basically, Tom Hayden gets arrested and Abbie Hoffman organizes the protests to go to the police station sort of thing. They get to the police station and they realize that there's a whole heap of police there. So they're like, okay, this is a bad idea. Let's turn around and go back to the park that we came from.
Too late.
And they get back to the park and they realize there's a whole heap of police there. And then someone yells, "Storm the hill." This didn't happen in real life. They didn't storm the hill because there was no police on the hill to storm. They were already on the hill and then the police arrived and they attacked them, basically.
Storm down the hill.
Why they decided to change that, because I feel like it kind of...
Probably because they...
makes them look...
They needed to connect the arrest to the riots for the movie, just like scene-wise. Like,
oh, no...
Just like, okay, that's a reason for us to walk up to the police station. And then when we walk back, let's put the pressure on. No, I think
they went to the police station, but it was the fact that when they come back to the park, there was so many cops waiting for them.
Okay.
When there was no cops there, they get back to the park and they actually were up on the hill and they were like all over the statue.
Right. So it was actually, it was kind of reversed. So you're saying like...
It was the reverse. The cops fight stormed actually did them, happen, basically.
But it's just the geography of it.
It did. It was the opposite way around.
Well, at this point in the movie, we haven't met Michael Keaton's character yet. And we didn't have the revelation that he put out later on. So I think if they do it this way, then it still looks like it's the protesters who started the riot.
Yeah,
because they're the one who charge hills. Whereas if you have them on the hill and the cops rock up, then already you're like, well, the cops started this. It's not anyone's fault.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if they just had left them alone on the hill, it would have been fine.
Exactly. Right.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. It did make that a lot clearer for the audience. Yeah.
And also, I think the kind of like the physical kind of idea of like, you know, the uphill struggle, battling the police and the establishment would also maybe be a reason. Yeah.
Like I get all that, like, but it's sort of, I feel like it confuses it because it does show them attacking the cops kind of thing when the, like, it was the opposite way around kind of thing. And I just feel like,
but it's only confusing if you know the story. Yeah. And I think a very vast majority do not know the story to that level of degree. Like, they're not going to think, hang on a second. No,
the police completely takes me out of it, man. They're going the wrong way up that hill. Like, that's just, Jace, you're only saying this because you hate Eddie Redmayne, so.
Every criticism of this movie is just because you hate Eddie Redmayne.
He was in jail. He was literally
that wasn't in the scene.
He was in jail. I love this scene.
It was obvious because Redmayne wasn't there. It's like those people who enjoy the, you know, the Two Towers because it has the least amount of Frodo whinging.
Yes! Damn straight! That is true.
Fred Hampton, who is the leader of the Chicago chapter of the Black Panthers, is killed by police in a raid on his home. And this is where Bobby Seale is then basically, he's just distraught and his outburst in court. Like, he just has this massive outburst in court where the judge orders him to be gagged and restrained. And then eventually that leads to a mistrial for Bobby Seale because he... hasn't been represented by Mark Rylance's character this whole time because Mark Rylance is representing the Chicago 7, not Bobby Seale. But the judge up until this point hasn't accepted that. So he's just sort of forced into this place of ordering a mistrial, which I feel like the way that this is presented, they should have known that they would have won it on an appeal. Because of how biased the judge is.
Yeah.
And just anything the judge did made it look so bad.
I don't know.
I
don't know that they thought, like, because if you're in that much power.
Yeah.
How do you know that the next guy that you appeal to isn't exactly the same? Like,
this is true.
That's true.
For us, it, like, in, you know, in hindsight, looking back is like, we can see how
that's fair, yeah.
Like how much of a mistrial this was, and the fact that it all got, you know, all these contempt charges and all their like charges ended up getting dropped, like makes complete sense. But I guess, yeah, you're right. Like, how would they actually know that anything would change after this judge kind of got replaced?
I think what is crazy for me is the timing of this, like that it was in development for like 10 years and then only gets released this year, like it finally gets made. In a world where, like, I think Trump getting elected was what greenlit it, and then it's released during 2020, which is probably like the craziest time for, you know, police shootings and stuff and in America.
Plus 3 months later, a similar kind of situation, but like, you know, with capital riots then occurs. And obviously, like, very different circumstances, but, like, in the midst of all this kind of talk that and discussions that's happening at the moment and, you know, all this actual conspiracy to start riot and,
but
like,
I think
create violence. Yeah. It's just nuts timing that all this is happening.
It's true. Mm. Yeah.
Fun.
So they basically, Mark Rylance realizes that he has a star witness in Ramsey Clark, which is Michael Keaton's character. Mm-hmm. And because that character was in charge of the previous government's inquiry into...
He was the Attorney General.
Yeah, he was the Attorney General that was actually in power when the protests occurred. So
the one who originally threw out
in charge of
any idea of charges being
so he goes to his house in, like, you know, a very contrived sort of scene where Michael Keaton invites all the FBI agents or, like, the FBI agents to come along so that he can basically just say, yes, I will go to court and up to them and all this kind of thing.
Because up until this moment, he sounds like he's not going to do it because he illegally can't. And Eddie Redmayne's like, you just got to find a bit of courage or whatever. And then Keaton's just like, you know, I understand that I can't do it, so you either arrest me or get the F out. And then he looks back at Redmayne, he's like, I found some. I like that.
That's good.
But but the way that he plays this scene, you kind of, like, you go, it's almost like Tom Hardy, Tom Hayden. It's almost like Tom Hayden's like the idiot in this situation because he's like, shut up, kid. Yeah. I'm actually going to do what you want me to do. Just stop talking. I really like the way that he plays this scene. It's almost like, are you happy now kind of thing? Like, shut up.
It's like, it's almost like, mate, you're stealing my thunder here. Just shut up, okay?
Like, step back.
I'm a U.S. Attorney General, bro. Yeah, I know what I'm doing.
Interaction.
Just let me finish.
I missed what you said just then.
I'm the U.S. Attorney General. I know what I'm doing.
Basically. So, he goes to court and the judge is like, you know what? I'm going to... take the jury out for this I want to hear what you have to say and see if it's actually relevant to the case and whether I'll allow the jury to hear it. So the defending lawyers interview what is his name? Ramsey Clark.
Yeah.
And he basically says, we did an inquiry into the protest and we realized that the police started the riots and that it was actually them that incited violence and all that kind of stuff, and that it was a peaceful protest up until the police got involved. And they're like, great, we've won this case kind of thing, but naturally the judge is like, I'm not going to let them hear this because I've already made up my mind, you're guilty pretty much. I think this is around the point that Tom Hayden's like, we're definitely not going to win this case.
Well, even as Ramsey Clark is leaving and they're like, you know, so you're not going to tell the jury of anything that just happened. He's like, no, we're not. And he walks past the lawyer. He's like, start preparing the appeal. Because then he's like, this is done. This has already been made up.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So it gets to the end of the trial where they're all about to get sentenced and they get to say their final words. And this is when Tom Hayden gets up and decides that he's going to read out all the names of the people that were killed during the trial in the Vietnam War.
Been a bit of a while they were busy this whole time with Rennie Davis every day jotting down every new person that's died.
And it's what,
during
by the
trial,
end of it, it's what 4,500 people.
Mm.
Did you say 4,500?
Yeah, something like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So it's a really sort of epic moment in the film, but in reality, David Dillinger was the one that read.
Oh, really?
This,
oh,
and he actually read it like 4 months into the trial, kind of thing. And like, I think he got like issued like in contempt.
I loved how many contempt issues they got. It's like
124
of them throughout the whole case.
Is David...
How many was it?
Over 150. I think to this day, it's still the most. Yeah. The lawyer, he got, like, on his own, he got 26. And I think they were giving out... Yeah. Actually, you're like, this is a little fact that I found. What was the Black Panther guy's name again? Bobby Seale. So he I think he got, like, 14 counts of contempt, to which then the judge awarded 3 months prison time per contempt. So after the trial, he still went to jail for, like, 4 years. Because of all the counts of contempt.
That's until they got dropped, right? Did he serve the full 4 years? Or did
I'm not sure. I didn't really go past that. Okay. They might have been pulled back out for an appeal, but I don't know.
You'd hope so, because that is horrendous.
It's a bit of a dick move.
And the fact that he was like innocent and found innocent of the murder as well later on.
Yeah.
Like it's just, it's insane, like the whole thing. So so that's the end of the trial. They basically,
Just before, like, that's, I just think that's such a great ending because the way that the setup was written too, it was like, you know, I'll permit you to say one final thing if it's respectful, if it's
brief.
If it's, there's something else. And
respectful,
if it's brief.
And brief.
And brief was the last one. And he was like, okay, so let me get this right. You'll let me say something if it's like respectful and brief. And the judge is like, And he's like, okay.
So and you look favorably upon my sentence.
So he was like, great. I would like to read out all the names, 4,500 names of every person that has ever that has died while we were or in this trial, and he starts going and just the judge just loses it, and it's this like perfect moment of pure revenge and the courtroom like goes wild.
And and everyone's on these guys' side, including the security, like the guards in, like no one's stopping him as to the, like no one is willing to like, you know, apply, like comply to the protests of the judge.
Yeah. Because you can't really like argue against that. Like it's like
You can't.
You get the great Hollywood moment as well of Robert Schultz's character standing up, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt standing up. In
this
respect,
is the this is the oh captain, my captain. This is the I'm Spartacus of the movie.
Yeah.
I was really hoping, because I don't know if it was real or not, or if it was just really clever editing, but during like the riots and the scenes like that, they kept cutting to what I thought was actual footage. Like it looked like they were cutting in between.
I believe
so. Some of it was,
A small part of me was really hoping that as they panned out when Redmayne was reading all the names, that it would then sort of quickly shift to like the actual footage and they would have like matched it or something. But obviously Dillinger being the guy who read the names and it was like months earlier.
Exactly. And
it would have then, if they did that, it would have been like a, basically like The Big Short where they turn into the camera and be like, so this meeting happened, but we didn't have it in this fancy hotel. And it was totally not like the way we're about to portray it, but it happened. Like that kind of stuff.
You know, one of the other things that wasn't real or the same is that the courtroom was not like that at all. It was more like O.J. Simpson's courtroom. like that kind of trial, like just a smaller, looks more like a office building type courtroom. Yeah, right. But they wanted like the big majestic hall for like the sound to reverberate through
bars
and fit more people in, in the gallery.
It looks good on camera.
It does. Yeah. It looks amazing.
You get
on
that
camera.
Light pouring through the window.
So good. Yeah, so that's pretty much the end of the movie. We get some final title cards where it's like basically they had a mistrial. Well, not a mistrial. They won on an appeal. Tom Hayden went on to serve as a politician of some sort. I can't remember what the actual...
A senator final, or something?
Yeah, makes something sense. Like that.
And he got re-elected like 6 times.
So, yeah, like we get the final title card also. So, in real life, Abby Hoffman actually killed himself, which is really sad.
It is really sad.
But the David Dillinger was like, nah, he'd never do that kind of thing. Like, he sort of refuted it for years because it was like a drug overdose. But the coroner ruled that, like, he had so much in his system that it had to be on purpose kind of thing. But in his later life, he was involved in a bunch of other, like, other things, like activisms kind of thing. Activisms. That's not a real word. Activism. I'm very,
we've gone
very
loopy.
Late. So, and yeah, and that's sort of like the end
was
of
it,
the movie.
Was it Jerry Rubin who just... I think it was Jerry Rubin.
He got
one
hit
of
by
them,
a car.
Like, yeah, but like someone, like one of them, like I think he got... He got just extremely wealthy on the stock market. And then...
Really?
Yeah, he bought GameStop? That's what he...
Good for him.
Yeah, like GameStop. And then he got... I think it was Jerry Rubin. It was like one of them just like got very...
He became a successful businessman.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Fee, what did you give it out of birds? How many birds?
A solid 4. My first 4, I think.
Solid 4. Yay. That's good.
Wow, the
that's
first good. Positive.
Well done. Yeah. I think that is the highest you've gone
it
on
is.
This, right? Like, yeah, wow.
There you go.
Because you went like a 3.8 or something. Like
I think it was 3.9. Yeah.
Like, when we use of the world,
basically hit as high as Jason has ever hit on his ratings this entire.
Oh, true. I've done like 4.
You've
and
done,
a half,
done like
I'm sure
one 4.5, and that's as far as you're willing to go. You know, yeah. Like no movies, 5 stars or 5 birds.
This could be a 4.5. You don't know.
I don't. So, we'll find out soon that it's not.
Dean,
I think what the lesson is: we need to convert the system from 1 to 5 to 1 to 10.
Yeah.
No, but that's the half.
Either that, or we stick with your decimal system, Fee. Stick with your decimal system because it works.
No. Okay. Yeah. What did you think, Jason?
Well, no, I'm going to Dean first. Okay. Dean, what did you think?
This is a solid 4.5. No, this is... I'd give it 4. I think I'm here there with Fee. I think this is outstanding filmmaking, especially if it was like Aaron Sorkin's second movie he's directed. Script is just fantastic. That's obvious. And it's definitely a front runner for me for the Golden Globes. So... Yeah,
there you go.
4 birds.
The Grammys.
Yeah, that's cool.
The Grammys.
Yeah.
I can't wait. Grammys. I can't wait to see how many medals this wins at the Olympics. It's going to be amazing.
Look, if Eminem can win an Oscar, Aaron Sorkin should be able to win a Grammy.
But wasn't it for a song? Didn't he win an Oscar
for
a song?
Yeah, he still won an Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was for
Famer.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, but that's not the song.
I guess because also yourself. Like you're getting it because Adele is also an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
Freaking. Yeah,
she was also
what's
an
his name? Also in 8 Mile.
It's called 8 Kilometer. Yeah. You've only got one shot, one opportunity. So, misplace yourself.
Paul, what did you think of this? Like, where does it land for you?
Yeah, it was good.
Let's
I enjoyed
wrap this
it.
Up.
I like the Sorko. He can write pretty well. Yeah. I'd also, you know, I'd give it my my nickname back in high school, and I would also give it just a solid 4.
Why?
Wow. What a compliment you got.
I don't understand.
I had mean friends.
They called solid you solid four,
four out of ten.
Solid 4 out of 10.
That must be what it was.
This guy.
Yeah.
Except Paul, so, the system we've just discussed is not out of 10. So you're really
Fiona, actually, are you trying to speak very highly of yourself? In, then yeah, it is out of 10. There are 10 anyway. Possibilities. I occupy 60 of them. Carry on.
Still, like, why is your nickname so full?
Don't do the math. It's 80. Don't do the math. Keep going.
Did you used to weigh like 4 stone? And
I don't even know what stone is. Like, who knows?
Right? I think a stone is like 16 kilos.
Nobody knows. Let's just move on.
Yeah, no one knows.
Jason, what do you give this rating?
Oh, yeah, Jason,
thank you. Thank you. I was waiting for it. So, I give it 3.5. I like it, it's enjoyable. It was good. But, yeah, it's not right up there for me. It's not a 4.5.
No, it's not a 4.5. Sorry, no. Yeah, I'm so surprised.
3.5.
Yep. What did you give News of the World? I don't remember.
Oh, like a 2 probably.
I think it was 3.5.
Oh, okay. Yeah, probably 2.5.
Yeah. 3.5 is kind of all our sweet spot, so we can't really give him slack for that.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you like the show and want to support the show, you can visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/nerdsbeforebirds, and you can contribute any amount starting at $1 a month, and that just helps us to keep the lights on. Otherwise, if you want to support us in another way, you can write us a review on whatever platform you're on. Nice 5-star review just helps us to get out
please,
there.
Please, we really want those 5-star reviews. I mean, Jason will never get one, but you can go ahead and please do.
Yeah. Why would I give one?
At most, he'll give us a 4.5.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't believe this podcast.
Yeah, he's too cool to give us a 5. He went to film school, you know?
We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Nerds Before Birds, on all of those except for Twitter, where we're Nerds Before Bird singular.
I give this
I'm going to bed.
1 star for each one, and that's a star for each friend that's on the podcast. So...
One of you know who you are. yeah, thanks, man. Thanks. I appreciate that.
A bloody boom.
Yeah. So I'm going to bed. Good night, everyone.
See ya.
Good night, everybody.
Bye, everyone else.
The power.